Welcome, everyone, to episode 348 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have a jam-packed episode today. We unfortunately need to talk about Jonathan Isaac's ACL tear. We'll also hit on Michael Porter Jr.'s breakout, the ongoing battle for the number 8 seed in the West, and whether the Raptors are a legit threat to repeat as NBA champions this year. Before we get into all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Wow, you went back to that one.
Yeah, you know, we only have 3 more months, hopefully, of the Orange Führer. So we really got to live it up while we can.
This is true. Well, I'm doing well. So I want to apologize right off the bat, because even though it's cloudy outside here, it's really, really warm. It's very hot. So I'm just going to do this. There we go. That's me opening a soda, and I'm going to be sipping this for the duration of the episode, because I need to keep cool. Otherwise, I might die. And since I don't live in America, I don't feel that's fitting.
That's fair. It's also absolutely pouring here. We're getting hit by that hurricane / tropical storm, whatever it is at this point. So if you hear raindrops in the background from me, that is why. I am currently soaked because I just let the dog out, and he is now taking a very rainy nap.
So, question, how would you rather go, like, in the current state of the United States? Like, would you rather die in a thunderstorm where basically Mother Nature has decided your fate for you? Or would you rather die in, like, a nuclear holocaust war?
No, I want to go out the natural way. It would make me feel a lot better.
Oh, like, on your deathbed, like, in age 86, when you can't even keep your own bladder intact?
Oh, no, like a tree falling on my house and crushing me immediately. Yeah.
Of course, yeah. Your brand new house, even. Yeah.
Correct, yeah. Well, then Alex could at least file it under our homeowner's insurance or something. Maybe get some money back.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah. Oh, man, hey, you know, I hope that works out for you.
Always thinking ahead here. Since we started on a morbid note, Mort, let's start with the bad news first for the bubble, then we'll get into a lot of the good news. Yeah. Unfortunately, on Sunday night, the Magic were absolutely boat racing the Kings. Jonathan Isaac is in the fourth quarter, just kind of getting his legs back under him because he'd been out since January with a knee injury. He will now be out for a long time with another knee injury, because he collapsed on a non-contact injury. He was driving to the basket, twisted his left knee the wrong way. You see the footage and you immediately fear for an ACL tear, and unfortunately, that is what it was. So the Magic, all they said in terms of his timetable is that he will be out indefinitely. But I mean, given the time, you know, it's August already. If the season starts in December, you know, optimistically, like, the absolute best he's going to come back is, like, February or March. But at this point, you almost have to assume he's going to miss most, if not all, of next season as well.
Yeah.
This is a very sneaky, pivotal offseason for the Magic. And I wrote about this yesterday at Forbes Sports, because Isaac's eligible for an extension, Markel Fultz is eligible for an extension, and Aaron Gordon, as our colleague at Forbes, Sean Devaney, reported, you know, the Magic were dangling him ahead of the trade deadline. His contract's only going to get better in the coming years. So you kind of assumed that, you know, the Magic were probably not going anywhere this year in the playoffs anyway. So you kind of figured, like, this might have been the offseason for them to make some big changes. How do you think Isaac's injury affects all of that now?
Well, first and foremost, kudos on the article that you wrote, because I think you hit it right on the head in terms of this is going to change the offseason drastically. I mean, you know, you can't trade Aaron Gordon right now, because now you don't have this four who were supposed to take his minutes and take his spot. That was the overall idea in Orlando. It was basically, you know what, we like Aaron Gordon, but we like Jonathan Isaac more, and we think he should get that spot moving forward. Having a four-man who's that defensive-minded, who can just fly all across the court, we'd rather have that. And then we can try to see what we can get for Aaron Gordon to kind of build around Isaac. But without Isaac out of the picture for... And I agree with you, presumably, like, all of next season, that just changes their plan. I mean, an Aaron Gordon trade that we deemed necessary and about to happen, like, that's probably been pushed back for a long while, which, you know, can be good or bad. Maybe this becomes a positive for Gordon in terms of not having to look over his shoulder, but at the same time, you know, losing a player of Jonathan Isaac's caliber, that's just going to regress Orlando collectively a ton. So this is going to be one tricky offseason for him coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I noted this in the piece at Forbes, but Gordon was substantially better, and the Magic performed better with him at the four this year instead of him at the three. But because Isaac was there, you know, he had to slide down to the three a lot. So in one sense, like, perversely, this might help Aaron Gordon and might help him generate more trade value, because now he's presumably going to get a full season as the starting four, because otherwise they have Al-Farouq Aminu and then Chuma Okeke, who's coming off, you know, he tore his ACL in the 2019 NCAA tournament. You got to figure he will play next year, but I don't think he's going to start ahead of Aaron Gordon. So, you know, this could be Aaron Gordon's, like, last chance, basically, in Orlando to prove, hey, I can actually be this modern new age small ball four and, you know, fit elsewhere. Like, I have untapped upside still. It feels like he's been in the league forever, but he's still pretty young. Like, I don't think Aaron Gordon has hit his ceiling yet. So it could help in that regard.
Right.
But... I mean, I think you're totally right, Mort. Like, as I said, they have Aminu and Okeke as their other two options, not counting Isaac. So if they're trading Aaron Gordon and they're not getting a power forward back, that's just going to immediately be a major downgrade for them. And, you know, I don't think the Magic are in a spot right now where they're looking to take a substantial step back just because they don't have... I mean, in theory, Isaac was their best prospect on this roster. At least the highest upside prospect. So they don't have that, you know, superstar to build around, and we could start, like, shaping the roster around him. In theory, Isaac was that guy. Now, knowing his injury history more, as I mentioned, he's eligible for an extension this offseason. Do you think he has any chance of signing? Like, I mean, I'm sure the Magic will try to lowball him off for a very team-friendly extension, but, like, did this vaporize any chance of him getting a market value extension?
Oh boy, so I want to be optimistic and say no, because we've seen, you know, teams gamble on players with, you know, this kind of injury before, like the Dallas Mavericks come to mind. Mm-hmm. They traded for Kristaps Porzingis. He didn't play because of the ACL tear. They still gave him a huge, huge contract. So I want to be optimistic and say, hey, he's going to get it. But here's the thing, though. While I really like Jonathan Isaac's game, I don't think even prior to the injury that he showed enough necessarily to warrant that kind of, you know, big ass extension. Like, defensively he did, obviously, but in today's NBA, you can't just play on one end of the court. I mean, we saw how the Celtics, you know, just kept developing Marcus Smart's offensive game. Because, like, you just couldn't have him out on the court if all he gave you was defense. Like, he had to be a factor on the other side of the floor as well. And for Jonathan Isaac, it's not that big of a concern as it was with early day Marcus Smart, but it is something that they've been looking at. Like, they want him to be more aggressive offensively. And because he hasn't been, you just have to wonder, like, how do they gauge him as a player non-injury, and how do they gauge him as a player or project him as a player post-injury? So... unfortunately, I'm just going to have to say I don't think he's going to get a huge offer. I think if there's a team out there that's willing to do it, okay. I mean, that means they have some guts. But on the surface of it, especially in this current economical climate of the NBA, I have my doubts.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's a good point about, you know, that we don't know what the cap is going to look like next year or in 2021 or moving forward. All we know is that it is likely going to decline somewhat significantly relative to the pre-pandemic projections. So, you know, instead of $115 million next year, it's probably going to stay flat, if not decline a little bit, stay at $109 million. And then instead of jumping to $125 million in 2021, who knows, probably in the $110, $115 million range. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, teams just might be more risk-averse in general. And, you know, the Magic have that in their back pocket. Like, they... if he's not willing to take a team-friendly extension, they can say, okay, that's fine. We're going to see how you recover. We're going to, you know, like, gauge whether we should be worried about your long-term health, because we don't want to commit $80, $90, $100 million to a guy who is, you know, going to keep going down with these weird knee, foot, whatever injuries. So they have a year to evaluate that. And then next offseason, they say, fine, like, if you will offer you this amount of money, if you don't take it, go out and get more. And if you do, then we have 48 hours to decide whether we want to match or not. Like, all of the power is in Orlando's hands here. It's just a matter of, I mean, the one nuclear option for Isaac would be taking the qualifying offer and playing on the one-year deal and becoming an unrestricted free agent in 2022. But, you know, given his injury history, I think that's probably going to be too risky at this point. Yeah. I don't deem that as especially likely.
No, I agree with you. But you know what's even more frightening if you're the Magic? It's that even when you get Chuma Okeke back, like, he suffered an ACL tear. So, like, and he was one of those, you know, game-changing defenders as well. So, like, at what point do you just kind of look at your roster and go, okay, we actually need to get some sustainability in here. Maybe someone who isn't riddled with major knee issues. Because while the idea of a healthy Jonathan Isaac and the idea of a healthy Chuma Okeke is nice, I mean, these are major lower body injuries, right? I mean, it has to figure in their minds of Orlando's front office, like, from the first moment these kids sets, you know, their foot back on the basketball court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, overall, this is just a really tough spot for the Magic. I was planning on writing about them even pre-Isaac injury, because I had seen a couple places mention them as like, oh, they actually have a lot of cap flexibility and, like, they could, you know, really remake their roster. And it was like, well, right now they do, but again, Isaac and Fultz become eligible for an extension this offseason, or they're restricted free agents next offseason. So that cap flexibility was not as robust as I think some of those articles made it seem. And now, I mean, this is just such a setback to really their chances of getting out of the treadmill of mediocrity. I mean, they're not going to be bad enough to completely tank and get a number one pick, barring, you know, some incredible lottery luck. And they play in the East, so unfortunately they could suck their way to 35 wins and they're in the playoffs automatically. So, I mean, they realistically, even if they miss the playoffs next year, they're probably going to be in the 10 to 14 range. So unless you find a Giannis or a Devin Booker or a CJ McCollum in that range, like, you're probably not going to get a super high upside prospect in that range. And again, like, who, I think Jonathan Isaac is their best player right now, but they just don't have that bona fide sure thing superstar. Like,
right.
Fultz, if he gets his jumper back, could develop into that. But there's just a lot of question marks on this roster now. And, you know, this injury, as you mentioned, like, really complicates the Aaron Gordon trade angle that we have been clamoring for years. So it kind of just feels like it pushes Orlando's major decision timeline back to 2021, at which point, you know, you have to decide on Fultz and Isaac. And then Gordon will be an expiring. So that is basically like next offseason will be, all right, you finally have to pick Isaac or Gordon. One of them has to go.
The Magic is just such a weird case because they've had the players together for so long. I mean, you and I have talked about this before. A lot of these guys have played together for over 6 years and they just haven't moved the needle. They haven't had that 1 year where they just go, okay, now we're there. And presumably, in the span of 6 years, I mean, you kind of know whether or not you're going to be something or not, right? I mean, I'm flabbergasted at how they kept this core intact without actually being competitive. Now, at the same time, and I want to ask you this, because you just brought up something interesting about in the East, you can, like, if you win 35 games, you're kind of just stuck because, like, you might actually make the playoffs with that, right, with that kind of record. Isn't it? I brought this up before in terms of, like, East and West rebuilding, but if you look at some of the most promising young teams as well, like, it's Dallas in the West, mm-hmm, it's New Orleans in the West, it's Memphis in the West, and then you can argue Atlanta in the East. But again, like, most of the great teams are located in the West, and even the up-and-coming teams as well. It is very West-dominated. Is there anything the Magic can do outside of basically blowing everything up and into bits and starting all over fresh again to get into that sweet area where there are, where they actually are an up-and-coming, legitimate good team?
Yeah, I mean, because even, like, Atlanta, I think you can argue, is probably going to take a big step forward next year.
Exactly, yeah.
The Wizards, with John Wall coming back, if they re-sign Bertans, they don't trade Bradley Beal, like, they should be competitive for a playoff spot. You know, the Nets getting their entire roster back, they'll right. be far more competitive. So Orlando isn't guaranteed to make the playoffs necessarily. Even the Bulls, I mean, if they fire Jim Boylan, they might be more competitive next year. But, you know, it's hard to see the Magic, as you said, without blowing it up. Like, I don't think they're falling below the Detroit Pistons or right. the Cleveland Cavaliers or the New York Knicks or even the Charlotte Hornets. So, yeah, what's your floor? Like, 11 in the East, maybe 12?
Yeah, that's just not good enough in terms of, like, losing enough. I understand that they fixed the lottery odds, but even so, I mean, yeah, I have a feeling that the Magic are going to be this decade's version of the Hawks, that you know, the area they were in, like, in the mid-double zeros. Remember, they were yeah. always, mm-hmm. like, the 8th seed, the 7th seed, right outside the playoffs. They just couldn't break into that whole thing until, like, they just figured it out. They got rid of Joe Johnson and they kind of rebuilt, and then they won 60 games with Coach Bud. So it's, I think for them, the Magic, that is, it's time, like you said, to make a decision, and not necessarily, you know, in a couple of years where all the contracts are up and you have to make a call. Like, I think you have to figure out a plan now. Like, yeah, you have enough data already. You have, you like, Vooch, Fournier and Gordon, they've played together for at least, you know, all three of them since 2014. Like, you have the data. You know it's not good enough. Like, mm-hmm. move on. Do something right. else. Shake everything up.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to be, because of this injury in particular, they're going to be an especially interesting team to watch this offseason. Because, I mean, we don't know whether Fournier is going to opt out or opt in, but that could force their hands. You know, again, the Gordon, Isaac, they pick one or the other that might get pushed back a year, but maybe it doesn't. I mean, maybe you're right, and they say, look, we have the data. We know this is not a championship team. Isaac's going to miss this entire season, so we're not going to, you know, we're not going to contend next year. Maybe we do need to take the big step back, and maybe we do trade Vooch and Gordon and shake things up and, you know, turn it over to our young guys. So yeah, it's, I mean, it just sucks. It's such a bummer for Isaac and the Magic organization in general. But, I mean, that's the NBA.
That it is. That it is.
So, on a happier note, Mort, let's go to the Denver Nuggets and Michael Porter Jr., who yesterday had the breakout game that we have all been hoping to see, you know, really this entire season, against the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Nuggets were without Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, and Will Barton. So Michael Porter Jr. started alongside Millsap, Torrey Craig, Jokic, and Monta Morris. Michael Porter Jr. had 37 points on 12 of 16 shooting, 12 rebounds, 4 threes, 1 assist, 1 steal, 1 block, 44 minutes in the overtime win. This was the Michael Porter Jr. performance when I was running the Nuggets for the BRGM week, when everyone tried to call me about Michael Porter Jr. lowball me, and I was like, no, absolutely not. This was the game I was waiting to see. Like, this is, I mean, if Michael Porter Jr. could string this type of performance together, and I mean, right. 37-12, you can't expect every night, but like, this is the upside that Nuggets fans are so excited about. Like, that is their third star if he turns that into, you know, somewhat consistent.
Third star? No, so let's be honest. This would be their second star. Like, this would be their second best player.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, remove contracts from the equation, and who has the brighter future?
No, I don't even care. We can even include contracts. But I still think it's Porter. But I mean, when you look at it, in terms of raw potential, like right now, obviously, I mean, you got to go with Jamal Murray. But if we assume that this is going to be more of the norm than him averaging 14 minutes a game, I mean, there's no question then Michael Porter Jr. is going to be that second star. It's just, I'm a little sad that, you know, there aren't more people in the world to observe what he did. But I mean, when you're dealing with population control, obviously.
Right.
Yeah, see, that bothered me. Yeah, I'm reaching that point where when someone says something extraordinarily stupid and then they come out and have a good game, I'm a little bit annoyed. Just for a moment.
I know. I was bummed that the breakout game came like immediately thereafter his very dumb comments about COVID. So that did take some luster out of the equation. But yeah, I mean, I like before yesterday, his career high in terms of scoring was 25 points. He did this against the Pacers on January 2nd. He had 20 points and 14 rebounds against the Timberwolves on January 20th. Those were his only two 20-point games this year.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we all season, and Nuggets fans are right along with it, you know, wanted Michael Porter Jr. to get more run. Like, he was inconsistent. He fell into the doghouse very much. You know, he just made a ton of mistakes, and Mike Malone pulled him very quickly. He was only averaging around 15 minutes a game pre-hiatus. Injuries
14 minutes. Like, yeah. Oh, Mike.
Well, I mean, injuries have forced his hand here with, I mean, Murray, Harris, and Barton were all out. It sounds like Murray will be back by the playoffs, but Harris and Barton, Matt Moore of the Action Network tweeted this yesterday. I think someone asked Mike Malone prior to the game, you know, is this just like, are you resting them because it's a seeding game and getting them back into shape? Or like, if this was a playoff game, would they have played? And he said no. So, there's still six games left. I don't know that we need to panic right now, but that is something just to keep in the back of your mind about the Nuggets. You know, we don't know who's going to be suiting up for them when the playoffs start in 2 weeks. Hopefully they're fielding a fully healthy lineup, but we just don't know that right now.
No, I'm you know, I was one of those guys who were really high on the Nuggets coming into this year, and I said at some point that I couldn't rule out like an NBA Finals appearance. I am very strongly backing away from that right now because I just don't think they're quite there. But they don't have the personnel right now for obvious reasons. But at the same time, you know, they don't look as crisp as they could have. Like the loss against Miami was like that was hard to watch. Like that was a whooping.
They got worked.
They really did. And I think, you know, I think everyone has been a little bit too quick to crown Denver the next big thing. Myself included, very much so. I think we need to like recalibrate our expectations at least until next year.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, if let's say hopefully again everyone is healthy, ready to go by the playoffs. If they are, would you keep starting Michael Porter Jr.?
I probably would. not just for, you know, the scoring, but I think there's a level of unpredictability when he's on the court. I think teams know that you can't really move away from him all too much because he can pull up for three. He has got that very, very high release point. And he kind of scores in a similar fashion as Kevin Durant. Not saying he is Durant, but he, you know, he, when he goes into the post, he's like 6'11 with long arms. He steps outside, you know, there's a high release point. So teams are constantly looking his direction, like, uh-oh, like, where's he at? Is he near the basket? Is he, like, cutting for a lob? Is he looking for a three? What's he doing? And I think that opens up everything else. Like, Jokic and him were playing great together, and part of that is, you know, defenders who are always looking for that pass, like, uh-oh, is Jokic going to connect with MPJ? Or like let's prevent the lob. Let's prevent that pass. And, oh, we forgot to actually guard Nikola Jokic, who's now at the rim finishing a layup. Like, I would start him just for all the weirdness that it brings to the table.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I think it comes down to if you're the Nuggets. Do you think you have a legitimate chance of winning the finals this year? If so, you probably can't start Michael Porter Jr. just because, you know, you're going to want guys who are more experienced, who have played more than whatever 50-some games in the NBA. Bring Michael Porter off the bench and let him be your, you know, your microwave scorer. If you don't think that you have a legitimate chance of winning the finals, I almost wonder if it is worth keeping him in the starting lineup just to give him that experience, knowing that, I mean, right, he's ultimately your X factor. He is your ticket to, we are a good, solid playoff team, top four in the West, to we are a legit title contender because this guy has raised our ceiling. Like, this, I was going to say gives us the big three. If you want to say big two, whatever. I mean, he could complete, you know, like Murray, him, Jokic could be the in-house big three. Like, maybe they don't need to trade for Bradley Beal because Michael Porter Jr. could be that star.
That's a good one. The in-house big three. I haven't heard that expression before. Is that around? Is that a common expression?
I don't think so.
That's a good one because, you know what? We have a tendency as an NBA community to like, when we say big three, then, like, it's usually one and a half player who's legitimately good. Like, a big three was Garnett, Allen, Pierce. Like, that's a legit big three. Whereas nowadays, we're like, yeah, Nikola Jokic, Michael Porter Jr., and Jamal Murray. Like, wait, what? Something's right. Not right there. The in-house big three, I kind of feel, solves that problem. I like that. Let's go with that. That's a good one.
Okay, good.
So in terms of your point, I agree that it would be in the best interest to start him, also if, like, they don't have championship aspirations. I still think it's a good idea to start him even if they do, because, again, like, the whole microwave scorer thing, you know me. I don't subscribe to the idea that you have to be just a scorer to come off the bench. Like, right, wouldn't it actually be more beneficial to Denver to actually have Paul Millsap, who is a two-way beast, who can also pass the ball coming off the bench? Like, hey, we have a guy with virtually no weakness coming off the bench who can absolutely murder your second units.
Mm-hmm.
Why not go with that route?
Yeah, I mean, take your pick of who. You could put Will Barton off the bench, Paul Millsap off the bench. It doesn't really matter. Or you can even throw Gary Harris, like, slide Will Barton to the two, put Gary Harris off the bench. I mean, take your pick.
Jeremy Grant. Just,
yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really interested to see. I mean, first of all, hopefully just the Nuggets get healthy, get everyone back by the playoffs, because it would be a bummer if, you know, if they aren't without, or if they're without Murray, Harris, and Barton. I mean, I would have a hard time picking them over the Thunder or the Rockets in a first-round series.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Jazz, I probably still would, just because I'm not afraid of the Jazz at all anymore. Hopefully they get everyone back, because I think this team is good enough to at least make it to the second round, or it should be at full strength. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting if they do get everyone back. I mean, Michael Porter Jr.'s development is arguably their biggest storyline, like, more so than any, you know, any deep playoff hopes they have this year. Again, like, I mean, I love you Nuggets fans, and I think you guys are pretty level-headed about where your team is. Like, you guys do have an extremely bright future, but I think you know you're not quite at the tier of Lakers, Clippers, Bucks right now. Michael Porter Jr. could push you up into that range, but, you know, he's not there yet. Like, this was an incredible performance. I don't know that you're going to count on him doing this every single game yet, but the more experience he gets and getting him playoff minutes, getting him that experience, having him, you know, just play in the spotlight of the playoffs and the intensity of the playoffs. I know it's going to be weird this year because there aren't fans there. It's virtual fans, whatever. But, like, I mean, we've seen it already in a lot of these seeding games. Like, that Raptors-Heat game yesterday, that felt like a playoff game. Like, the intensity, the physicality, the defense is there. So as this ratchets up over the next 2 weeks, getting MPJ legitimate run in that environment is only going to do wonders for his development.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. And I ultimately, that's also why I said I just don't think we should, like, be talking about them as a championship contender necessarily. I agree with you. There are much larger storylines in place, such as Michael Porter Jr., the health of the, you know, the roster overall, the development of Bol Bol to some extent as well. Mm-hmm. There are just so many subplots going on with the Nuggets that I wouldn't be surprised if it's going to take a year or maybe a little bit longer for everything to, like, fall into place and gel. Like, Paul Millsap might not be on the roster next year. Right. Jeremy Grant might not be on the roster. There are a lot of components that they need to figure out.
The development of future Rookie of the Year Bol Bol, I think, is number one on their list.
Well, wait a second. Wait, that can't be true, because now that he's played, that counts, right?
I thought they said, some NBA reporter, I thought they said if they play, maybe it was only the scrimmages, though. Maybe it was not the seeding games.
Yeah, I think that would be correct, because that's like preseason games. Like, Blake Griffin played in preseason games after he got drafted, and then actually got injured during the preseason and then didn't play in the regular season, and then next year he was a rookie. Right. I think that makes more sense, because right now I'm looking at Bol Bol, and he has official stats on his list, and as we know, if you have played a second of NBA basketball, you are a one-year pro.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, maybe I was confusing it with, that's a shame. I already bought future odds on Bol Bol Rookie of the Year. That's just money gone down the drain.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, look, if Ben Simmons can win it.
Exactly. There you go.
Right? Yeah. Maybe Ben Simmons wins it this year. Who knows?
I mean, hopefully. Donovan Mitchell just needs to be salty about something every year.
Yeah.
All right, Moit, let's pivot over to the increasingly interesting race for the number 8 seed in the West. When we got to Orlando, the Memphis Grizzlies had a 3.5 game lead over 3 teams. We are now a few games into this seeding games, and the Memphis Grizzlies, they're down to a 2 game lead. So we are all but assured a play-in tournament in the West, because the East, it's not happening.
Right.
Here's Memphis's remaining schedule. Utah, OKC, Toronto, Boston, Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Are you nervous at all about the Memphis Grizzlies falling out of the 8 seed and having to, you know, they could still be in the play-in tournament, but on the side they did not expect to be in coming into this thing?
Yeah, I am for them. I mean, honestly, I'm at that point where I wouldn't hate it if Portland actually, you know, made it, because I think, you know, I've been vocal about this. You know, what they did last year, I think it's such a shame what happened this year, and they were just riddled with injuries. So if Portland made it in over Memphis, I wouldn't complain. But at the same time, no Morant in the playoffs would seem like a shame too. But for Memphis specifically, yes, I think this is a very, very difficult road ahead. Not just in terms of the results, but just having to go up against these teams on a night-to-night basis, you know, being so young that they are. Mm-hmm. If they get absolutely beaten down by these teams repeatedly, and then they have to go into a play-in situation. Where's that psyche going to be?
Right.
Like, are they just like, oh, we're worth absolutely nothing. We just got our brains beaten in like six times in a row. What? I mean, are we even going to be competitive? So,
right.
I think it's an interesting subplot, but yeah, it's definitely a very, very difficult schedule for them.
Yeah, I mean, the one saving grace is like that Milwaukee game is their last game. Milwaukee's going to be locked in the one seed by then, so maybe Giannis doesn't play or doesn't. You know, maybe right. they treat it more like a preseason game and like Giannis plays 20 minutes or whatever. But hell, as we've seen, 20 minutes to Giannis is still probably like a 30-15.
Yeah, six. I was about to say that's not doing the Memphis Grizzlies any favors there, Bri.
right. But the same goes for those Toronto and Boston games. I mean, those two teams could effectively be locked into the 2 and 3 seeds respectively by then. So again, maybe these teams aren't treating it as seriously, but then again, I don't know. I mean, that's one of the big questions for the rest of these seeding games is, you know, once you're locked into the seeds, how seriously do you take these things? Because on the one hand, you want to keep everyone healthy for the playoffs, whatever. But on the other hand, like 8 games and 3 scrimmages is not a ton of time to get everyone back up to game speed and back up to where they were in mid-March, pre-pandemic hiatus. So maybe these teams do treat them more seriously than they would a game on April 12th when you have your seed locked in and you're going to, you know, rest half of your starting lineup.
Right.
So I'm officially starting to get a little bit worried about Memphis, which we knew was a possibility coming in. I mean, before the hiatus, they were supposed to have the hardest remaining regular season schedule, so they got a tough draw in this. And unfortunately, I mean, their first 4 games were the most winnable ones, and you know, they lose in overtime against Portland, they lose to the Spurs, and then they lose last night on the back-to-back against the Pelicans. I mean, the Pelicans were, you know, had they lost last night, like this just changed the narrative for both teams completely. Like, had the Pelicans lost last night, I think we'd feel better about the Grizzlies' chances of hanging on to the 8, at least going into the play-in tournament, mm-hmm. and the Pelicans would be on life support at this point.
Yeah, yep. It didn't really help matters that it was the Ja Morant versus Zion Williamson show, because that has a lot of subplots as well.
Right.
No, but I agree with you. Like, for entertainment purposes, this was like this was drawn up pretty well. The question is, like, how far can New Orleans go from here, right? I mean, I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't have a good grasp of where they are right now, because Zion is still somewhat on a minutes restriction. He played 25 minutes last night. And, you know, they won against a team that's been a little bit downtrodden since entering the bubble. I just don't know how much stock you put into that.
Right. So, working in the Pelicans' favor, here is their remaining schedule.
Yeah.
Sacramento, Washington, Spurs, Sacramento, Orlando.
Well, they could lose the Spurs game.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, that. I think the Spurs game is the hardest one left on their schedule,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. No, but it's a cakewalk, because, you know, obviously they wanted to replicate, you know, the remaining schedule that they had left. And then they made it maybe a tiny bit easier than they should have, because hashtag Zion, but...
Right.
Yeah, look, can we talk about just the NBA bending to, like, Zion's will? Not Zion's will, because Zion isn't asking for anything, but, like, they are just... They're doing everything in their power just to get him into the prime, the spotlight.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you think about that?
I think it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, yeah, I understand it, but I think it's pathetic. Like, his time will come. He's 19 years old, and I think it's unfair to someone that age to kind of be put this responsibility, to have this responsibility be put on your shoulders without having a say. I mean, we're sitting here, and we're talking about how the NCAA is basically just, you know, demanding everything for nothing all the time, and they're dictating every move within the structure of that league. Now, if we do that, we have to be fair. the NBA right now is treating Zion Williamson the exact same way. Like, he hasn't asked for this. He hasn't asked to be put as the face of the league almost. And I think it's, I don't know why they're pimping this so hard. This is a league that right now has never had as many stars at the same time as they have right now. There are plenty of alternatives that you could go to. Hey, guess what? Giannis Antetokounmpo, who most likely will be the defending MVP, might actually be having one of the top five best individual seasons in league history. Yet for some reason, hey, look, there's a 19-year-old who can jump. Let's give him all this. Let's give him all this responsibility that he hasn't asked for. Let's stress the living hell out of him and the organization for no other reason than Zion, Zion, Zion. Like, it's dumb, and NBA marketing should actually be a little bit ashamed about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a ratings play.
Right.
It goes back to, you know, the NBA, like, acting like this bubble is in the national interest of all America, when it's like, no, you just wanted to make sure you didn't lose $1 billion, which I understand. That's unfortunately, that's how capitalism works. And you're going to need to, like, when you're staring down $2 billion in losses, you're going to want to preserve as much as you can. So I get it. And the same deal here, like, Zion dating back to his time at Duke was a huge ratings draw. The NBA saw that and realized, okay, let's try to emulate that. Let's keep that momentum going. And, you know, unfortunately, injuries got the best of them this year and kind of risked a lot of that positive momentum. But I'm with you. I mean, I can see wanting to push him as a next big star.
Right, right.
But not the next big star. When you, as you said, you have guys like Giannis or Luka Doncic or Trae Young who are already established, young, really good, really exciting players. Like, tap into that. Don't just make it one guy. We should be celebrating all of these guys and, like, really trying to build all of their brands, because the game only gets healthier when you have, you know, a higher number of stars on a higher number of teams.
Yep.
So I'm totally with you there. We mentioned the Spurs last episode and how we were pleasantly surprised. I mean, I'm only more pleasantly surprised since we've last talked.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you going into the bubble, you were talking about, you know, not that are they better without LaMarcus Aldridge, but that because LaMarcus Aldridge is not there, they are forced to downsize. They are forced to play DeJounte Murray and Derek White together more than they had during the season. Lonnie Walker is getting more run in the starting lineup too. DeMar DeRozan is now playing at the four,
right,
which takes advantage of his reluctance to shoot. Although he did, of course, hit a three-pointer against the Sixers last night.
He took three of them. What the actual hell is going on?
It's every single bad shooter. Just every time you play the Sixers, you... All of this shooting, it's like the Space Jam, like all of the juju that was once in Sixers players somehow transfers to every other opponent, and they are suddenly able and willing to shoot in that one game, and then you leave the home court of the Sixers and you immediately go back to not being able to shoot. But no, I mean, they suffered a tough loss last night. They honestly shouldn't have lost. Like, the Sixers got very lucky. Brett Brown was the first to admit it. The Sixers' defense was just abysmal for the second straight game. But, I mean, the Spurs look really good.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if we're sleeping on them in terms of their long-term upside. Because, you know, we've talked, like, of course, they're stuck between two eras right now. They've got, you know, this really good, young, exciting core. And then they have DeRozan, Aldridge, Patty Mills, Rudy Gay. But a lot of those guys aren't necessarily going to be there for very long. I mean, a lot of them are going to be gone after next season at the latest. I'm wondering now, I mean, we know whatever is coming with the cap next season is not going to be good. And, you know, even if DeRozan opts in at 27, he's got a $27.7 million player option. Him, Aldridge, Gay, and Patty Mills are all on expiring contracts next year. Gay and Mills, I mean, Rudy Gay is at $14.5 million. Patty Mills is at $13.3 million. Like, I'm wondering if some contenders are looking at them as, hey, we can actually, you know, if we have bad contract and the Spurs are willing to take them on, like, we'll give up a good piece because these guys are like actually productive and can help and can make us better next year. So the Spurs, like, they might have some sneaky, we can upgrade very quickly potential.
No, I mean, look, I've never been against the Spurs actually having a high ceiling moving forward. It's just dependent on the fact that they make the right call and actually go with the young players and they try to build. So my problem was more so that because they were always, you know, aiming for the playoffs and the playoffs and the playoffs, despite actually having less and less and less weapons at their disposal, that was just going to make them lose out on actually getting new players through the draft at higher spots. I understand that the Spurs can find value late in the draft. That is not lost on me. But at the end of the day, when you look at the major players that they got who turned their, you know, franchise around, it was David Robinson picked number one overall and Tim Duncan picked number one overall. So, like, I'm not at that point where I'm sitting, you know, where I'm looking at the Spurs and I'm going, oh yeah, you can find franchise caliber players like late in the draft every single year. That's fine. No, at the end of the day, you still need to have high draft picks because those are the best players. Those are the franchise caliber players that you find. I mean, there's a reason that those guys are looked at as number one, number two picks. So for them to consistently just ignore that area of team building and go, you know, we just got to be competitive every single game. Like, while commendable, it just also made it difficult for them to turn the corner and actually separate that line that you spoke about, like playing both fields, playing young guys, playing old guys. So I'm high on them, assuming that they do the right thing and they actually add to this youth movement they have going on. Like Dejounte Murray, Derek White, Lonnie Walker, you know, Jakob Poeltl, Keldon Johnson. Like, there's a lot of guys there to like, absolutely. But if that's the roster you end up with, it's still not good enough. You're still going to need at least one, if not two, major pieces around that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Quindary Weatherspoon might be...
Yeah.
He might be there. He might be their Michael Porter Jr. Who knows?
That could be fun. No, but I'm... No, but I hear you. I hear what you're saying. And I also think... I think there is something to it. It's just a matter of what... Like, what are they going to do? Because, look, the Spurs or one of those teams that you just can't predict anything with. We could, you know, enter the offseason and a report comes out. The San Antonio Spurs have extended with DeMar DeRozan for 2 years.
Right.
Like, I don't think that's going to happen, but would it shock me if it did? No. It wouldn't. Yeah.
And, I mean, looking ahead, they've got some big games coming up. Denver on Wednesday. Again, we'll see who is suiting up for Denver in that game. Utah Friday, Pelicans Sunday, and then they close out with Houston and Utah. Do you think they have a legit shot of playing spoiler here and crashing the playoff party, like getting that number nine seed and forcing the play-in?
That would be so fun. That would be so fun if they did. I mean, look, while I'm rooting for the Blazers on this one, I wouldn't hate it if this happened, just because it would kind of solidify as well that, hey, look, we are actually very good when we play a perimeter-oriented style of play. Yeah. That would prove it first and foremost, that in which case, you know, all of us, you know, people who've said these things can actually take our victory lap. I've been dying to take a victory lap about this. but, no, it will also just add to Pop's legacy, which I'm always down for. Like, why not? He's already the greatest coach we've ever seen. Might as well add some layers to it.
Yeah. It's going to be, I mean, this race is only going to get more exciting as these games go on. So even if you are a fan of an Eastern Conference team who's already locked in and, you know, only jostling for seeding, watch as many West games involving these 8, 9, 10, 11, you know, the contenders for this 8 seed as you possibly can, because these, every single game is a playoff game, effectively.
No, it is. And it has that playoff feel, which is also further surprising to me that, you know, Derek White has stepped up. I know he scored those 36 against Denver in the playoffs, but like this has been consistent. Like he's averaging almost 21 mm-hmm. points a game in the bubble. Like he's taking over from LaMarcus Aldridge. Like that scoring yeah. burden, someone was, you know, the team was looking for someone to pick up that slack. Here's Derek White of all people, like becoming a 3-point bomber. Like, and he was one of those very conservative shooters before. Now he's just straight up gunning and he's hitting. I love it. This is everything the Spurs was supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Going back to BRGM week, I want an apology for everyone who ever doubted me for acquiring Derek White.
Man, you are still so sour on that one.
It took so many years off of my life that one week.
Well, that doesn't matter when a tree is going to hit your damn head in a moment.
That's true. Yeah. That is very true. Wait, let's wrap up with the Toronto Raptors,
yes.
who have looked exceedingly good in their two games in the bubble so far. They pounded the Lakers 107-92 on Saturday, and then you know, we mentioned the Miami game earlier, 107-103, like had a legit playoff feel, playoff intensity to it. The Raptors, we've been saying this all year, like them winning the title just immediately transformed them from you expect them to collapse at the end of games and close games to they just expect to win now.
Yeah.
Even though Kawhi's not there, they just have the collective confidence in themselves, and Nick Nurse is just such a good coach that, like, I expect the best for them instead of the worst, which is something I could not say about the Toronto Raptors before last season.
So on Twitter, I had a Danish, not a Q&A, but like I started like an NBA conversation about the Raptors in Danish, and more or less with the mindset of can they repeat? And I was actually expecting most people to say no, it's too far fetched. They don't have Kawhi. Like what they've done is good, but it's not great. Like, to people's credits, most, like, there were some of those, of course, but most were like, yeah, they can. Look at what they're doing. Like, Kyle Lowry is legitimately scoring 20 points a game. You know, he's and is one of the great defenders that we have in the league. Fred VanVleet is a two-way player. Pascal Siakam is like, the featured number one guy now, and it kind of works. OG Anunoby is extremely valuable. You have a great bench in Norman Powell. Serge Ibaka is playing the best ball of his life. You have all the role players who are stepping up. And one thing I noted in all of those replies, which only adds to like Toronto's strengths, no one, absolutely no one mentioned Marc Gasol. And I think that's interesting because here's the thing. Gasol adds the layers that we never talk about, like in the overall spectrum. Like everyone is like, oh, scoring, oh, defense. Yeah, he does play defense. He's a former DPOY. But it's the passing. It's the intelligence. It's the communication. It's the pointing out of things that's going on. Like it's all the little things. That's a guy they have too at their disposal. Who doesn't even need shots? Like this year he's taken six shots in a game, 6.5 shots a game, and he's extremely valuable. Like they have so many weapons, Bri. All the time, like looking over the roster, I where's the weak link? Pat McCaw, maybe.
I guess so, but that you're going so far down the list at that point that I mean, which team doesn't have a weak link and they're like eighth or ninth man?
Yeah.
I mean, like they're starting five. You would say it's like they have an undersized starting five, and that should be a matchup that you could take advantage of. But Kyle Lowry is just so goddamn annoying on that end of the floor. And honestly, Fred VanVleet has acquitted himself very well defensively. Like he is not an elite one-on-one defender, but because they have guys like OG Anunoby and because Ibaka, Gasol. Like, he, even if he gets beat, they have backups in place that, like, they have a solid team defensive scheme that can make up for any individual weakness from VanVleet or really anyone else. But honestly, like, I don't see teams targeting VanVleet very often defensively. Like he just held his own on that end as well. And I mean, that is kind of, you know, we talked about a hypothetical Toronto-Boston matchup because it's really going to be a contrast of styles between, you know, the Raptors are bigger with Siakam, Ibaka, Gasol playing big roles, and, you know, the Celtics are more guard and wing oriented. But, you know, look ahead to a potential, like, whichever one of those teams wins that matchup goes against Milwaukee most likely in the conference finals. The Raptors have the size to counter Milwaukee. I mean, they are one of the few teams that can, like, that has a matchup for Giannis, that has a matchup for Brook Lopez and Robin Lopez. Like, do you think, I mean, we've talked all year about the Bucks, the Lakers, and the Clippers being the three favorites in the East. Do you think Toronto deserves to be in that conversation too?
Yes. I'm pretty sure you asked me this a couple of times before. Yes, this the answer is the same. Of course. Look at what they have. Look at their execution. Look at their defense. Like, what is there a... Like, let me ask you this. Is there an area of the court or, like, a statistical perspective where you look at the Raptors and you go, oh, they're not up to par?
Not really. I mean...
So what's the doubt? Is it not having, like, that number one, like, A-plus superstar?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's ultimately where it is.
No,
yeah.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair. But I just kind of want to key in on where the doubt is, because you're not the only one. And I'm not saying that you're very skeptical about the Raptors by any stretch. That I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here. But I you know, you and I have both seen that the belief around the Raptors isn't a whole lot. There's a lot of doubt about that organization, like in terms of being a valid championship contender now that Kawhi is no longer there. And when you just look at the numbers and you look at the execution and all that, I just think it's interesting to like just point down what is it exactly that people feel uneasy with about the Raptors. And if it is the lack of not having like a Giannis or LeBron or whatever, that's perfectly reasonable. Like if people doesn't think that Pascal is that guy yet, okay. I'll say this though. He's damn good. He is really damn good. And then when you have that supporting cast, I feel bad saying supporting cast because I don't look at it as a supporting cast. But when you have like a Kyle Lowry and a Fred VanVleet, and you had an Anobi, and you have, you know, Norman Powell coming off the bench scoring 16 a game while also giving you defense, and you have Marc Gasol, who's very capable of doing everything. He's just basically been playing Ben Wallace all year long, saying, I don't need to shoot, but that doesn't mean he can't. And you have Ibaka, you have Terrence Davis, Chris Boucher. Like, the depth is something we just don't talk enough about. Like, you can just keep throwing guys at teams.
Yeah.
That matters.
Yeah, I think it is definitely the lack of Kawhi is what gives me pause personally. And it's not fair to what they've accomplished this year, but you just think back to last year's playoffs and like how important he was. Like if they don't have Kawhi, they don't get past the Sixers. Right. So like did that separate them ultimately? Like did that raise them from, you know, really, really good team to elite championship team? I don't think you can argue he didn't. But, you know, the counterpoint to that is, yes, they lost Kawhi, they lost Danny Green, but a lot of their other guys got better. Like, they didn't get really anything out of Anunoby last year. They didn't get much out of Powell last year. Marc Gasol was new to the system, so he was still, I mean, he's more comfortable this year than he was last year. Kyle Lowry is substantially better this year than he was last year. Same goes for Siakam. So, you know, if I'm looking ahead to Toronto-Milwaukee, like, Milwaukee goes into that series as the favorite.
Oh, of course.
But I don't think it's crazy to think Toronto could beat them again.
No, I think that Toronto is going to get beaten by Milwaukee specifically. It's not that. It's just like we always have our championship favorites, but we can't sit here and go, "Oh, only one team matters." Like that's not the way you do things. And I think people have just been so quick to basically say right from the start of the season, well, the Raptors are irrelevant. Like, that's not going to be a storyline. That's not going to be an issue. And then now we're here, and they're clearly like one of the six best teams in the league, right? I mean, that's, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That is a clear, there is no question.
Well,
oh,
okay.
I would say one of the five best. Like, I would say it's the two LA teams, Milwaukee, Toronto, and Boston, are the five best teams in the NBA in some
way. Well, okay. So if they're a top five NBA team, then there's not really like any reason to not have them in that conversation in terms of could they win the title. Like if you're yep. a top five team, I think it's perfectly reasonable to say, well, then you have a certain chance to actually make it there and win. I mean, what it's Daryl Morey who says, if I'm not mistaken, that you know, if your team has a 5% chance at the title,
yep.
you go all in, right?
I would say
that the Raptors have a 5% chance of winning the title.
Yeah, I agree, and I think a lot of it does go back to Nick Nurse.
Too. Yes,
I mean we talked about him. We both picked him as our coach of the year. NBA coaches did not agree. This came out yesterday that Mike Budenholzer and Billy Donovan are splitting the chosen coach of the year. It's not the media one. There was some confusion about that. This is selected by other coaches. They tied for the number of votes, and Nick Nurse was one behind, which, like, that, I get Bud getting it. I get Donovan getting it because no one expected much out of the Thunder this year. But, like, it surprises me that Nick Nurse is not at least in a tie, if not ahead of both of them. Because, like, again, his malleability, I think, is just so unique, especially in the regular season. I mean, most of the time you just see coaches like, all right, this is our game plan. This is what we're doing. We're going to stick to it regardless of personnel at times. And Nurse is just like, no, we're going to change up what we do every single night. We're going to be unpredictable, even on a possession-by-possession basis. Like, him breaking out a box in one, I will just always go back to that. Like, who does that? Who does that in the NBA? Like, his willingness to be creative is an asset for, you know, we always talk about, like, unpredictability. We were mentioning that with Michael Porter Jr. earlier, how he adds that to the Nuggets offense. Nick Nurse adds that to the Raptors.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have nothing negative to say about Nick Nurse whatsoever, nor do I want to. So, and I think that's a compliment in and of itself, especially in today's NBA.
Would
if he walked away along with Coach Bud as a co-coach of the years with the real award, I would clap in my fat hands because those are the two guys that I had trouble like separating and choosing off of.
Yeah.
So if they walked away with like co-coach of the years, that's fine. If Billy Donovan wins, I'm going to be upset. And look, I think he's done a pretty good job with this roster, all things considered. But come on. Like, no Nick Nurse?
Yeah.
That's blatantly ridiculous.
So here's my question about Nick Nurse. If you are starting a franchise from the ground up, who would you pick? Nick Nurse or Giannis Antetokounmpo?
Oh, I mean, all right, relax. I'm going Giannis here, but like, if you were asking me, like, Harden or Nick Nurse? No.
Do you remember these? This is like the meme with him and Brad Stevens a couple of years. Giannis and Brad Stevens a couple of years ago.
Yeah, no, I do now. That was when Brad was getting all of that attention, and he was like, even he was like shying away from it. Like, because some beat reporters were bringing it up. Like, oh, you're becoming like a sensation. He was like, oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, no, this is stupid. Pick the guy who's going to immediately win two MVPs, please.
No, but I will say as much. I mean, I would pick Nurse over a substantial amount of NBA players. Because I do think that having a guy who tailors himself to the roster instead of the other way around is very intriguing. Like, what could he do if the Raptors got another superstar on the roster? So we saw what he did last year. He won the damn title.
Right.
Add one more superstar to this team, and he can probably do it again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do wonder if it's fair to say Nick Nurse is getting... He deserves the hype that Brad Stevens got a couple years ago.
Well, he has a ring. Where's the ring, Brad?
Unfortunately, I think it's coming, if not this year, at some point.
Yeah, it probably is. I'm just saying, you know, Nick Nurse right now in his coaching career is 1-for-1.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. All right, Mort, I think that's a good place to wrap up. So thank you to everyone, as always, for listening. Hope you're enjoying these seeding games. 12 straight hours of basketball every day is just about the best present that we could have asked for after 4 months of absolute hell. So enjoy this while it lasts. We've got another week and a half of it, thankfully, before the playoffs begin. We will be back touching on all the big storylines throughout the rest of these seeding games in the playoffs. So please follow us at the NBA Pod on Twitter. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we are being hosted by Spreaker. So follow them on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, any movie reviews this time?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I forgot what it was called. I did see something. Give me a second on this one, because... So I've been watching a lot of basketball recently, but I actually did take time away from the game just to, you know, get my head straight. What did I see? Oh yeah. Now I remember. See, I had to go to IMDb to actually remind myself what I see. I saw a comedy drama called Instant Family. It's with Mark Wahlberg, Rose Byrne. It's about, you know, a couple that wants to adopt, and like it's really a sweet film. Normally I'm not the biggest Mark Wahlberg fan, but I think he does really well in the setup. I gave it a 7 out of 10. It was a really adorable little movie that also brought a lot of life lessons to the table, such as having kids is not easy. Like, there are going to be issues. So yeah. I would definitely recommend that one.
Never would have guessed. Thank you.
I know. But here's the thing. You know, even in my own life, I have certainly met a lot of people who completely underestimate the amount of work that goes into it. Like, when we had our first, Bruce, you know, a lot of people were like, yeah, you know what? We're thinking of getting ours too. It's going to be easy. It's going to be blah, 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 blah. We don't understand. Like, why are you so tired all the time? Yeah. Just, you go ahead. Right. So, honestly, you should really have a license before you get kids.
Yeah. All right, boy. Well, enjoy the rest of this week, and we will catch up in a couple days.
Sounds good, my man. Don't die.
Thank you. You too.